So this is a joint work with Adrian Dumitrescu about and Minkui Jiang about the thermal Weber center of convex Poinsett. So I have slides for the first half of my talk, and then I'm going to switch to Blackboard, but don't be surprised. So let me first tell you what the this thermal Weber point is. It has several names because it appeared several times in history. So typically, you have n points in the plane, and you want to find a center point that's close to all of them. There are many different ways to measure that. You can one easy way is just to minimize the sum of distances. That's right here. So if you have these points, you want to find a point P that minimizes the sum of distances from all of these. And this was called thermal point, Torricelli point, Weber point, and you can use any combination of those now. So for instance, it would be a good approximation of it. I didn't compute it exactly because even for n equals 5 or higher, there's no algebraic formula for finding this point. There are efficient approximation algorithms. For 3 and 4, one can really write a formula, and then that was known for a long time. So this was usually motivated by facility location and statistics. What I'm going to talk about is not, in this first half, is not the point set, but thermal Weber point for a domain. So there we have an infinite number of points, and you want to find a point that minimizes the average distance to these points. So what does that mean? So for a point P, P, you just integrate the distances to all points in the domain, Q, and divide by the area of Q. So so it is known that for every point, this gives the average distance to that domain, and there is a point that minimizes this distance. So that's considered the center, thermal Weber center for this domain. And so there's a point that minimizes, and there's this minimum distance that I denote by this mu star of Q. So this is exactly the average distance from the center. And if you think about locating fire stations in a city with uniform density, then this center point would be an ideal location for placing a fire station, and the distance is the average distance, how long it takes to get there. I will be interested in the relation of this average distance from the thermal Weber center to the diameter of the set. So this came up from an application by Carmi, Harper, and Katz, and they conjectured that this ratio of the average distance to the diameter is always between 1 over 6 and 1 over 3 for convex sets in the plane. So why do they conjecture this? So if you look at the circular disk, then by symmetry, the thermal Weber center is just the center of the disk. And so if the unit radius, then the diameter is 2. And if we just look at the average distance, well, it's enough to look at one sector, and we can quickly compute that this number is this ratio is 1 over 3. And it's conjectured to be the maximum. And where does the 1 over 6 come from? So if you look at the rhombus of diameter 2, but it's a very thin rhombus, so the other diagonal has length 2 epsilon per some arbitrary small epsilon, then again the center is just the thermal Weber center is just the center of the rhombus by symmetry, and one can compute that this ratio goes to one third, but the diameter was 2, so it's gonna the ratio is gonna be 1 over 6 in the limit. And again, conjecture to be the smallest possible value for this. So just a few words where this application come from, what motivated this ratio. So they studied the a geometric load balancing problem where they have a convex domain and certain facilities already given, so it's not facility location. The facilities are given in this problem, and they want to subdivide it into regions so that the average time to reach from these fire stations, this district of the city, is minimized overall. So in fact, they want to minimize the sum of these average distances over all regions. So the simplest variant is that the domain is a rectangle and there are points in it, and they want rectangular regions. For this version, they use exactly this ratio, this mu of q over the diameter of this body for an approximation algorithm. And if we have a better ratio, they immediately have a better approximation ratio for their algorithm. But I'm not going to tell more about how that works, so let's get back to this ratio. So what was known before? For the approximation algorithm, they already had some ratio, which showed that it's always at least 1 over 7, then it was improved to 4 over 25, and now we can show that it's always strictly more than 1 over 6. So if we go back, that 1 over 6 here can only be reached in the limit, so in fact it can be strictly more than 1 over 6. It's always strictly more than 1 over 6 for every convex body. What about the other side, upper bounds? We had a previous upper bound of roughly 0.3849, and we can improve this a little bit to this quantity here, which is much closer to the conjectured 0.3333. So we couldn't prove the conjecture 1/3, but it's getting close to that. So let me tell you about the how the lower bound works. So this is a tight bound, 1/6. So this uses the Steiner symmetrizations of convex bodies. Just a reminder, if you have an axis, so we have a convex body and an axis line, and for every line orthogonal to the axis, we just project the cross section down to a segment which is symmetric to this axis. And if you do that for every segment, then you get a symmetric convex body. A few facts about the symmetrization: that preserves convexity, which is not immediately obvious, and symmetrization preserves the area. That's just from this procedure, it's obvious that it does, so by integral. And and it's an obvious observation that if thermal Weber center will be on the axis, which is so somewhere on this line after symmetrization. It's all not very difficult to show that the diameter is also preserved. But it's not for every line. It is preserved if we choose the line so that it's parallel to one of the diametral pairs of points. So then this diametral pair will be preserved, and none of the other pairs will be longer. Let's get back to this notation. So I introduce this notation SQL for the Steiner symmetrization, so of the convex body Q in axis L, and this comes up here in the next slide. So if you have a Steiner symmetrization of this convex body, then the average distance from its thermal Weber center can only decrease. Of course, it cannot strictly decrease, because maybe this Steiner symmetrization doesn't do anything. It was already symmetric. Even if it's not symmetric, it might just stay the same. So how does it go? So let's suppose that this is the thermal Weber center of this convex body Q. And Q prime is the symmetrized body. then if we just project P down to the axis, then it might not be the Fermat-Weber center of the symmetry of Q prime, but the average distance from P prime is certainly greater or equal than the average distance from the actual center. So it's enough to show this, that this inequality holds, and this other one is obvious. So I need to argue why this is true. And for that, it's an easy integral is the proof. So the average distance is just the average, so again, divided by the area. We integrate the distance from the point. And we can think about this convex body as being bounded by a lower arc and an upper arc. So we integrate from the lower to the upper arc. And then it's enough to look at just the inner integral, which is a single integration in a single vertical segment. So here we integrate the distance from point P to these points on this vertical segment. And after symmetrization, the point P prime is on the orthogonal bisector of the red segment, and that's why this inner integral is smaller and equal for every single segment, and that completes the proof of this lemma. So the purpose of this lemma was that if you start with an arbitrary convex body, we can just symmetrize it to a line containing a diametrial pair, and then we obtain a body, a symmetric body. And it's enough to look at just one quadrant of this, which is in this upper quadrant, so where we can assume that the origin is the Fermat-Weber center. We want to show that, by scaling we can just assume that the longer diameter is just one, so the of this this quarter of the body, so the entire body is what would continue, and the diameter is two, and the smaller cross section is some b that less than one. Once we fix the diameter, it's enough to show that the average distance from the origin to any part of to this quarter of the body is less than one third. So how can we do that? We partition this convex this quadrant of the convex body into smaller pieces. So one piece will be a large triangle. For which it's easy to compute that the average distance is strictly more than one third, depending on the height of the triangle. So we can get something better than one third by some delta that's that we can just fix given this triangle, and based on that we can just partition the remainder of the convex of this quadrant into mostly triangles. Into these triangles that have two vertical segments on the left side, and they all end have a common endpoint on the right edge of the body. So if we look at these triangles, for each of these triangles, the ratio is still at least one third times the area of that triangle. For this large piece here, this Q node, it's also true because every single point of this part is at least one third distance away from the origin. So we only end up with these tiny little pieces up there, for which we can't really say much. But if this subdivision is fine enough, then the total area is negligible, and their distance from the origin is not arbitrarily big. So it's going to be, the contribution will be less than delta times their area. So this delta here that we gained from the big triangle cancels any contribution for these little red pieces that we don't know much about. So that proves the that the average that distance from the origin for the entire body is at least 1/3. So what can we say about the upper bound? So this is the part where we don't have a tie bound. Well, let's just recall Jung's theorem. So there's a tight bound on the relation between the radius of a circumscribed circle of a convex body and the diameter. So this is between 1/3 and 1 over root 3 in the plane. And we simply just approximate the Fermat-Weber center by the center of this circumscribed circle or enclosing circle. So maybe it's not the best point. It's not doesn't minimize the average distance, but it's certainly an upper bound for that, and we can work with this. So once we have this point, we just partition the convex body into tiny slices. In each of these slices, so for each direction there are two opposite slices that are approximated by a triangle, and for that, for each of them we can tell the average distance from the center of the circle. It's enough to show a bound for the maximum of these pairs of regions, because that's going to be the an upper bound for the entire convex body. So the average distance, maximum of the average distance over all pieces of the convex body is the upper bound for the entire average. So let's look at one of these double sectors. So we can just denote the lengths of the two sides by x and y. Assume that one of them is smaller or equal than the other, and then we have these conditions. Then the sum of the x and y is less than the diameter, because no two points can be further away than that. Just assume that y is less than x, and even the bigger one is less than 1 over root 3 times the diameter. That's from Jung's theorem. So subject to these conditions, you want to maximize the average distance from the center just in this double sector. And because of their triangular shape, we can just write up this approximate formula. So the average distance is proportional to the cube of the radii, and the area is proportional to the square of it. So this is the formula that we get for the pair, for the double sector. And we can just solve this optimization problem. So if x and y, so the extremal value is something like diameter over root 3 and 1 minus 1 over root 3 times the diameter, and that gives the bound. So now notice that if x and y are equal, then we have actually a tight bound. So then there's no calculation is necessary. Here we just get 2 times x cubed and 2 times x squared, and that means that if we have a centrally symmetric convex body, then we can prove the conjectured value of 1 over 3 as an upper bound. So which is realized for the circle, but the bound holds for every centrally symmetric body. However, if x and y can be different, then this is the best we can prove. So we have looked at possible improvements for this, because if you think about it a little bit, x and y cannot always be unbalanced. So as you rotate this double sector around the center, there will be at least 3 points where x and y are equal. So one can try some averaging argument that what happens, what is the transition between this extremal value or the maximum unbalance of x and y and the equality. But it turns out that one cannot really gain much. And with this argument alone, one could not prove the conjectured one-third. So we didn't pursue this direction. So remains open by whether the circular disk is the extremal body for this. Some other further direction for this problem. So this was a facility location where the cost of reaching a facility is proportional to distance. But there are other problems where the cost is proportional to some power of the distance, some kappa power. And then we can ask the same question for this measure, but we can define the average power kappa distance from any point P and denote it by this mu kappa. And then we can talk about the this variant of the thermal Weber center where a point minimizes this this quantity. The first guess could be that this is just the same as the thermal Weber center. It's just if you change the exponent, nothing will change. Well, it's not quite true. First observation is that the proof for our lower bound, which was tight, works exactly the same way. So that carries over. This here, the extremal configuration was this very thin and long rhombus. And instead of one-third, we get a lower bound of 1 over 6, we get this lower bound of 1 over kappa plus 2 to the kappa. If we change kappa to any larger value. But the upper bound is not quite the same because for the usual Fermat-Weber distance variant, the circular disk is conjectured to be the extremal configuration. But if kappa is large enough, then there are convex bodies where it's no longer the maximum. So if for instance, for the Rouleau triangle and for a regular triangle, there will be points that are roughly 1 over root 3 diameter from the center, and by increasing this exponent kappa, these outlying regions will have much higher weight than in the circular disk, and they outweigh the closer areas, so we do not know what is the extremal configuration for the various values of kappa, but we know that the circular disk will not always be the extremal one for every kappa. So this would be an interesting direction to pursue. Any questions so far? So I want to talk about another topic, but for that I lift this. So was there any questions so far?
Anything known about the high dimensional question?
Nothing more than the. So you might guess that the disk or the ball is an optimizer and a narrow and long convex body. That's there's no proof for anything. Yes?
You said that from the point of view of applications, you are thinking of fire stations or something like that.
Yeah, passive location. Dependent of the location.
It would depend,
As far as I know, nobody looked at this version because already this was is unsolved. So, but it makes sense to look at other distance measures. Any other? So the other problem I want to talk about is about stars and Steiner stars, which is also a joint work with Adrian Dumitrescu. So stars. So here we are getting back to the Weber or Torricelli, Fermat, and Weber problem for point sets. So remember, it was on my slide. We have a point set, and the Weber point is Fermat. Weber point is a point that minimizes the sum of distances from these points. You can think about this graph. This is a geometric graph with as a star. So this is called a Steiner star. Because the center is not part of the original point, the given point configuration, we added von Steiner point and drew a star graph on it. And one can ask, what is the length of the minimum Steiner star? So if this point happens to be the Fermat-Weber center, then of course the total edge length of this star is the minimum possible. So this is called now a minimum Steiner star, where minimum means minimizing the total edge length. And so that was the second part, Steiner stars. Stars are something much simpler. Here, you're not allowed, if we are not looking at the Steiner star, then again, we are given a point set, and we want a star, but without adding Steiner points. So that just means that draw it in a same point set, but with maybe a different point set, another copy of the same point set. So we just connect one of the points to all other points. So this is star. And again, we can have a minimum star, minimum from edge lengths. So here we have, for n points, we have n possibilities to choose the star center. And out of these n options, we pick the best. So this is Steiner star, and this is just S. And so we're interested in what is the Steiner ratio. Is that clear? So Steiner ratio. So this is the Steiner ratio, so the length of how much extra do we have to pay for not allowing a Steiner point? How much longer does our star get if we use one of the original points as a center? So of course we can compute. As I said, it's, there's no algebraic way to compute the Fermat-Weber center, but we would still be interested in how much worse it gets. For one point set, it's, one can just approximate it, but in general, we would like to know this ratio for any any point configuration. So this is rho. Of the point configuration, and rho is just the minimum ratio. The maximum ratio over all finite point configurations. So, pardon me? length is the total edge length of this graph. So you can think about it as a graph which has, it's a star graph with edges, and we just sum up the edges, edge lengths, and that's the length of the graph. So this is conjecture that this Steiner ratio is maximized for a very special configuration that has something to do with sphere arrangement. Which is not very visible. So it's conjecture that the extremal configuration is, well, in the limit, is points on a circle, uniformly distributed points on a circle. Of course, one can define the same thing in D dimensions, and then uniformly the extremal would be the uniformly distributed points on a sphere in this space. So this is S D minus 1 in RB. And here you would have uniformly distributed points on the unit sphere. And for this, one can easily calculate what is the average distance. If the number of points goes to infinity, this is just the average distance from one point of a sphere to all other points of a sphere. So CD is the average distance from a point of the sphere to all other points of the same unit sphere. Or in other ways, that this is the integral of 1 and integral of the distance for an arbitrary point of the sphere. So for instance, this is not the same constant C as in Janosch's talk. It's easy to calculate that it's I think 4 over pi in the plane and 4/3 in CD, and the limit is root 2. Like, if you think about it, you have a high dimensional sphere, then the volume is concentrated on an equator, and that's why the average distance is roughly root 2. But but I wanted to say that for the Steiner ratio, it's conjectured to be exactly these numbers. In the worst case, but there's no proof for any of these. So what we did with Adrian is improve the bounds. So Sándor Fekete and Hank Meyer proved the Fekete. Meyer proved that this Steiner ratio in dimension D is at most root 2. In every dimension, and with Dumitrescu and Jungkalb, we proved something better. So it's now 2 root 2 minus CD over 1 plus 2 root 2 minus CD. So even though it is not quite the conjectured value, it's a little better. So let me just plug into D equals 2N. So this is, just find the actual numerical values, 1.361 for D equals 2 and 1.383 for D equals 3. And this also converges to root 2, so that's an upper bound. So let me just tell a couple of words about this. So one nice thing about this, apart from having a better upper bound than just this uniform root 2, the other nice feature of this bound is that it already involves this crucial quantity, the average distance from one point to all other points in a sphere. Let me just tell a few clues about the proof, how we do that. So in fact, we compare two upper bounds for the minimum Steiner ratio and choose the best out of two. So one is, and the two approaches are quite simple. So one is the first approach is just the same as what Fackett and Meyer did. So let me tell what how they got this upper bound of root 2 in every dimension. So what they said is that if you have a point set and you have no idea where the and you don't know which is the best star, which is the smallest star, this one, then just look at the Fermat-Weber center, even if it cannot be computed, it exists, and approximate the smallest star with the closest point to the Fermat-Weber center. Well, maybe that's not the best choice, but it always gives this estimate. So again, so if this center is the Fermat-Weber point, and one of the points, so this is the closest point, P node, of our given point set, and all the other points are somewhere further away, then it looks like it might be a good approximation. Just instead of the Fermat-Weber point, just take a star with this center. And you might realize that it's not all. So this, if you do this, you actually always get root 2 as an upper bound. But you might quickly realize that in many cases, this might not be such a good choice. For instance, if this is the closest point to the Fermat-Weber center, but all other points are somewhere concentrated around here, around the around the orthogonal diagonal of the circle, slightly outside of the circle, so they are not the closest anymore, but the distance is roughly root 2, so roughly root 2 for all points, and we need to sum them up. What we did with Adrian is comparing this bound, which is not that bad after all, with another choice, which is again something very simple. We just take the average out of all n choices, n stars. So so what we prove is that taking the best out of these two, the closest star center to the Fermat-Weber point, or the average lengths of a star over all n possible choices gives exactly this. So I'm not going to go into how the method of Fackett and Meyer works. Let me just focus on averaging the lengths of all stars. So if we have a point set, Fermat-Weber center and several other points. So one of them is the closest, so this is the closest point, and this is these are two other points. Then we can just approximate the distance between these two points by something longer, by going through the to this unit circle, or this circle to the closest point. So it has unit distance. Just assume. So instead of the actual distance between two points of our point set, we just take this distance. So again, what happens, we just project all our points to a unit sphere. So these are going to be projection points. They are I and Q, Qj and Qi. And use these distances. So once we have, let me just try some formulas. So the so an average length of a star is just 1 over n times the sum of star lengths. Well, now, what I just said, this distance can be upper bounded by this detour. So instead of direct distance, we go through the projection to the unit sphere. And have plus these extra distances where this can be directly related to the length of the Steiner tree. Because why? Because we still keep a reference point to the optimal Steiner tree. So these distances can be directly related to the length of the Steiner tree, and these distances between the projection points are again directly related to the quantity CD. So if you just forget about those two, and so. Then this is upper bounded by two over n squared times CD. So again, this is just the pairwise distances of a set of n projection points on a sphere, and this is known to be upper bounded by the uniform distribution. In fact, this for endpoints in a plane, László Fejestolt gave an explicit formula for the maximum quantity of the pairwise distances of endpoints on a circle. yes, let me just show that to you. N So again, this quantity is this n over tangent of pi over 2n is the exact value of the maximum maximum sum of pairwise distances over for n points in a circle. So this is remarkable to just express it so compactly, considering that for the sphere in 3D or any other higher dimension version, this is a very difficult discrepancy problem. For the planar version here, we actually need exactly this value, the C2. So the values of C are of course known because these come from simple integral formulas. I'm probably not going to show you how these two upper bounds. So I actually don't show you either of the two upper bounds, but I already gave away the idea how what the proof is based on. So probably not going to tell anything more. Any questions about this?